Hello, Bullshitters. We're back. Season two. As if season one wasn't bad enough. We sat in a car in a farm shop, car park. And we're just about to talk about Red Tractor and all that green bullshit. See you in a bit. Right, we're back. Andrew's just about to say something. I cut him off there. So it might have been important. We'll never know. So, yeah, we're back. So there's a lot of controversy, however you say it. There's a lot of it about Red Tractor in general and their new green farming commitment and the modules that they want to introduce. Is this just more bullshit where people make money out of farmers, or is this a real commitment to actually turning the industry round and making everyone more environmentally friendly? So I don't know, especially our foreign listeners might not be aware of this. It's a very localized thing to the UK, but it's probably coming your way soon, something similar to this. So yeah, prick up your ears and see if this has any kind of relevance to you. So I'm going to let Andrew waffle on a bit about what this actually entails and means, and then we'll try and pick it apart for you and see, well, give you our opinions. So Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for that. explain Red Tractor and the new greener farm commitment in a nutshell.
Yep. A regenerative hazelnut shell from Chile.
It was grown unsustainably. I don't know what to say because I don't know what to say.
So what's Red Tractor?
Yeah, Red Tractor. Red Tractor is an organisation that has effectively created a standard that produce is then produced to. They will have rules, regulations, industry standards that if you achieve... and then you are certified for achieving those standards, you can sell your produce as farm assured.
Cool, that makes sense.
So it's grown to a standard.
And that's a British standard, that's British.
It's a standard. So one of the common misconceptions would always be produce that has the Red Tractor logo. The Red Tractor logo is quite literally a red tractor with a Union Jack background.
Union
flag background. So that is, so when you look at the logo, you assume that it's British.
Exactly.
So, but it's actually not. And I mean, when I say that, I mean, there is produce sold in the UK that was grown in Spain, for example, or parts of Africa, that has that red logo, a Red Tractor logo on as well. So it's not that it was grown in Britain. It's purely that it was grown to the standards set by Red Tractor. So any produce grown anywhere in the world, grown to those standards, sold in the UK, can then put that red logo tractor on.
So these people that go on Twitter, go rummaging around the apples in Tesco's and say, oh, look, grown in Siberia.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's got the red tractor.
Famous for their apples.
Yeah. Ouch, you like them apples. So there's obviously a little bit of a knowledge gap, would you say, where Red Tractor are not doing their job properly and informing us what these standards.
I think it's predominantly, this is me looking from the outside in. I'm not an expert in all the ins and outs. I've not read all of the legislation and regulations that go with it.
But we don't claim to be.
That's the whole point of why we're doing it.
Yeah.
But the truth of it is a Red Tractor is an organisation that generates a lot of money from farmers, and it's heavily supported by supermarkets. So ultimately, the people that are buying the produce from the farmers. Farmers produce the produce, and then the supermarkets will purchase the produce.
Yeah.
And it's the supermarkets that are driving the need for farm-assured produce.
Okay, and what drives that? Is that a marketing thing?
Well, they would claim that it's the standards that they set, you know, it's good animal welfare, you know, environmentally better, you know, you're using less potentially using less chemicals or using the right chemicals. You've got a chemical store, so you're storing the chemicals better or fertilizers better. You know, your fuel tank would be bunded, so if you have a leak, you know, those things. So it's the sort of almost not the it's the red tape. That's what it is. It's the red tape.
Bureaucracy.
It's not the fact that you're growing the wrong variety of apple or carrot or wheat. It's that, you know, it's just like the food hygiene certificates. The difference between a 3 food hygiene rating and 5 is the paperwork.
Yeah.
The cleanliness of the kitchen could be the same.
Yeah.
But the paperwork is the difference between getting a 3 and a 5.
Okay.
And it's the same sort of principle. It's the paperwork. It's the reporting.
Yeah.
You know, that side of it is what really gets you the Red Tractor certification.
Okay.
So supermarkets are promoting this as a good thing. They're looking at the Red Tractor logo. It's a way in which they can sell produce at a slightly higher price. The farmer will actually get paid a little bit more for farm-assured produce, generally speaking, when he sells livestock at the market, for example.
Or is it a case of they can't sell it if they haven't got it?
There's always somebody that's willing to buy produce that isn't produced to the Red Tractor standard. So there are people that are still willing to buy it. Generally speaking, the supermarkets, however, won't touch it. So it'll be your local butcher, for example, your local farm shop that doesn't give two hoots as to whether you've got a Red Tractor logo on it or
not. But they've ultimately got better quality product generally.
And again, it might not necessarily mean better quality. How, you know, define quality?
Yeah, I get you. So the Red Tractor isn't necessarily assuring that you could have a bag of Manky apples from Siberia that have got Red Tractor,
and it's,
but
it's,
they had all the Kosh leaflets and things in a folder in their office.
Yeah, it's as much the paperwork that goes with it and the record keeping that goes with it as the actual quality. You know, they don't come around. It's when livestock obviously is my background. So referring back to livestock farms, you know, there is a minimum stocking density for sheds.
Yeah.
So if you can only, you know, farm assurance can say that in that shed you can have 10 cows.
Yeah.
I've got to make sure that I've got 10 cows in there.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm not farm assured and I put 15 in there, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't meet the Red Tractor standards. And the Red Tractor standards would argue that by only having 10, the animals that I'm keeping have a better quality of life. There is therefore higher animal welfare.
Until they're killed. Vegetarian speaking.
They end up being killed. So it's not necessarily saying that the produce, you know, so referring back to those two sheds, one with 10 cows in, one with 15, the meat at the end of it is highly likely to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
The living conditions for the animals that were within the sheds, you could argue one was slightly better.
But
you
sounds,
would rather have a little bit more room than less room.
It sounds quite arbitrary, though. It sounds like a pen pusher's paradise. It really does.
Yes. It is, you know, and the whole part of Brexit was that we move away from this Red Tractor. Well, not necessarily move away from Red Tractor, sorry, but move away from red tape.
Yeah.
And pen pushing that was being blamed on the EU.
Okay.
When that's possibly not always necessarily the case.
So Red Tractor recently has been rubbished. It's not covered itself in glory.
Nope.
At all. And now the latest bit of bollocks coming out of there is they want to do these voluntary green modules as part of the green farming commitment. So are they going too far? Are they have they spoken to farmers about this? Have they spoken to scientists?
No. It's driven, from what I can tell, it's driven by supermarkets.
Right.
So supermarkets are effectively creating another hoop for farmers to jump through, and I'm guessing at the end of the day that if you were to jump through this hoop, we will pay you a little bit more for your produce that you are producing.
Okay.
Because then we sell it at a premium because it's at a higher standard.
Right. So it doesn't actually affect the produce. So you could do all this, comply with their whatever is in their modules, and sort of like get the tick, but you might not necessarily have better quality produce, or it just seems a bit.
It's obviously there's a big focus, and we've had conversations in previous podcasts around actually what's the whole point of, you know, it keeps coming back to marketing.
Yeah.
These supermarkets are under pressure, or they feel they're under pressure, or are they creating pressure? You know, one person has asked them what the carbon footprint of their steak is.
Yeah.
So now every single steak that they sell has to have a carbon footprint, and we're looking at reducing the carbon footprint because one person's possibly asked for it.
Yeah.
So they've jumped on the bandwagon. They're being seen, and again, it's a bit of a PR stunt. They're, look, we've worked with the Red Tractor logo to create a new standard for producing products that are sustainably friendly or green, you know, which is a term that I don't particularly like anyway. No. But putting that to one side, it is a way in which supermarkets can market produce as a premium, better quality, grown or produced to a higher standard, and therefore charge the consumer a little bit more.
And who's set these? What evidence-based, knowledge have they used?
And that's the farmer's issue. It doesn't sound like farmers have been consulted on this at all. So it was basically just been launched with almost no communication, knowledge, interaction with farmers, the growers, the producers.
Are the NFU involved?
So Minette has said something, was interviewed, and I sort of half saw it last night on Twitter or X, and I didn't really listen because I was half asleep. But they were criticised for not saying anything originally, and now she's saying something and it's a different stance. So I don't really know what the latest is on that, because it's changing all the time.
So it's getting quite political.
But it doesn't sound like they were consulted before the release of these new standards or this new module.
So is that one of the issues, the fact that it's actually more coming from Red Tractor talking to the big boys, the retailers, and the the producers, yeah, and the processors?
That's always the case, you know, and I can see the frustration of not being spoken to, not having the chance to have your say. But the reality is if I'm buying something from somebody, as the buyer, I can ask all the questions. Mm. And if I don't like the answers, I don't have to buy it.
Yeah.
That's the same with any market, with any product that you produce. Here, I've just produced a brand new TV. Me as somebody that's looking to buy a TV, well, does it have HDMI cables? Can I watch Netflix? You know, I ask the questions of the person selling the TV. If I don't like the answers, I don't buy it. The supermarkets are asking questions. They are setting the standards. If you as a producer don't meet those standards, we're not going to buy them.
Yeah, but then there comes a point where if you say about this television, you say, "Oh, right, will it transport me to Venus?
Yeah.
Can I get visions
so
of Uranus?"
So it's the realism, the realistic nature of the standards they're setting. Yeah. The truth is that there is no recognised, scientifically approved, sustainable, you know, undisputed and industry-wide accepted standard for sustainability or even regenerative or any of that nonsense. It doesn't exist. So, you know, you can reduce your nitrogen inputs. Does that make you sustainable?
Wow.
You can stop ploughing. Does that make you sustainable?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not ploughing, but I'm still using Roundup.
Yeah.
Or other forms of,
yes,
you know, which is better, which is worse, you know, who's right, who's wrong. Yeah. is a little small mixed farm that's using organic manures, minimal inputs, you know, producing a few head of cattle a year and a bit of grain that they sell through a farm shop, better or worse than a feedlot? Because if you look at the emissions per cow grown in the feedlot, the emissions per cow would be less, so technically they are a far more efficient producer of meat,
which is exactly why they've become so popular, because there's efficiencies,
you can multiply it by a bigger number.
Absolutely.
So it's not a black and white picture. There is no right or wrong,
but what is actually those feedlots, what is actually driving them is economics.
Yes, of course it is. They're not farmers, they're factories.
Yeah.
It's a business. It's a factory.
And there's nothing wrong with that. We live in a capitalist society. So there's nothing wrong with making money and having efficient industrialised...
Unless you're not a capitalist.
And
and then it's a problem.
Okay, Trotsky. But what I'm saying is, we all want to make money, but the thing is, have the Red Tractor gone too far? Are they imposing some of this dream scenario that's come up from some...
Well, so we went to the Green Farm Collective.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be mistaken for the Greener Farming...
Commitment.
And all they're doing is they're doing the same sort of thing. You farm to a standard, and if you meet that standard, we will market your produce as greener and regenerative.
Yeah.
Wild Farmed, Andy Cato, everyone loves him.
But he's dealing with farmers.
Andy Cato has farmed. Jake Freestone and all the others, Angus, they've all farmed themselves. Yeah. They are all farmers. They know what they're doing. So that is a more realistic and both commercially and probably environmentally friendly and more achievable, realistic way of farming.
But more limited in scope.
Potentially. Whereas the supermarkets have come in and are telling farmers what they can and cannot do, which nobody likes being told what to do.
Yeah.
For a start. So the communication with it is all wrong. It's told, you know, everybody's saying, oh, it's not compulsory, it's voluntary. Well, we all know that in 2 or 3 years' time, it's going to be compulsory to get the
de
red
facto,
track.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's irrelevant. So being told what to do, nobody likes that, whether it's right or wrong.
Especially by people with no skin in the game, because a lot of, I mean, how far do you then, I mean, if you're going down that line, what are you allowed diesel in your tractors? Have you all got electric tractors? Yeah.
There are people, and this is where... It's really annoying for me as somebody who's sort of half involved and but also a little bit sort of set back, so I can see the bigger picture, is it just seems to me that there is no industry recognised standard. There is no, you know, widely accepted method of farming that is 100% sustainable, regenerative, environmentally friendly. Everything that we do is moving away from nature.
Yeah.
So it has an impact.
Yeah.
You know,
and
talk
knock-ons
about
as well.
Biodiversity loss and rewilding. Well, the only way in which you can rewild is to literally close the gate and walk away from a field.
Yeah.
If you put cattle in there or do anything, you are managing that. It is no longer wild. Yeah. It is a managed environment.
Yeah.
So rewilding, for me, they need to reassess possibly how they communicate and what their so-called standards are.
Yeah.
But it's the same principles, is that you're being told what to do by somebody who's not necessarily generally invested themselves. Yeah. So it's an outsider telling you what to do. And then the standards that they've set, and I don't know what all of the requirements are, but I can guarantee you that some of them are better than others. And some of them, possibly actually in isolation when you look at it, might not be that good at all.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the farmers have to remain profitable.
Yeah.
So if one of the regulations is you can only apply 1/10 of the fertilizer, well, your yields are going to take a hit.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a happy medium. And at the end of the day, farmers have to remain profitable. And farmers will have to do this because it will become compulsory. And the only way in which they'll get paid is if they jump through the hoops.
Mm. Especially as sort of like BPS is dropping. So the actual sources of income for a farmer are actually disappearing. So you're getting a situation where it's becoming economically just nightmarish to be a farmer.
Subsidies is a can of worms probably best left closed.
Yeah, I agree. But what I'm saying is when you say you've got an organisation like Red Tractor and they're saying, oh, you've got to do this. Oh, and now you've got to do this. And now you've got to manage every earthworm. You've got to count every earthworm. Yeah. You've got to measure your carbon, however you do that. And then at the same time, that same farmer is getting less and less money from subsidy.
That's the way these things work. And I've had conversations with people about it in the past, is at the moment, you've got the Red Tractor, so there's your standards. And you will get paid a premium if you meet those standards.
Yeah.
So once everybody is meeting those standards, how do they look to add value again? They create new, higher standards, which people will have to meet. Once everybody's meeting those new, higher standards, there is no premium because that's the standard, that's the norm. So it's always a way of looking to add value. You know, I've said it about regenerative. Organic was the same previously. You know, there was farming. Yeah. Well, okay, how can we differentiate what we're doing? And by differentiating, we can add value. And by adding value, we're saying that we're better.
Yeah.
So organic produce was sold at a premium. And because it was a premium value, it must, in the eyes or the mind of the consumer, be better.
Yeah.
Well, now that we're meeting the new Red Tractor standards, this is the new accepted norm. This is the absolute pinnacle. Everything below that, they're obviously not very good farmers.
But who the fuck are these Red Tractor people? What is it? Isn't it a bit like Wizard of Oz? Someone behind the curtain. Who are they? What gives them the right? Are they an arm of the producers?
Who gives the Soil Association the right to dictate what is organic and what isn't? Well, there is now, you know, the Organic Association have done a very good job at defining what is and what is not organic.
Yeah.
Really clear set of instructions for organic and not organic. And it's a similar sort of organisation. The Red Tractor was put in and developed and introduced to show that the UK farmers were producing to a standard that was industry recognised. So it's recognised across the industry as being that is of a good standard of either animal husbandry or agronomical sort of growing ability.
Yeah.
That's why it was introduced, to differentiate in the supermarket between good produce and what is considered bad produce. So farmers and
so now this new thing is saying good farmers and bad farmers.
It's by adding value to something, you are showing or demonstrating that it is a premium product.
Yeah.
You know, just like the whole term regenerative. If you're not regenerative, you're obviously degenerative.
Yeah.
If you're not a premium product, you're a substandard.
Subpar, yeah.
So that we create division, us and them, in the whole of society. Everything is us and them. You know, you either are or you aren't. There's no in between.
Sorry, she's a big girl. Jesus. Sorry. I don't think she knows to go in the calf, does she? Sorry, being fattest. Sorry. Actually, I am the fattest.
She's supporting British farmers.
I think McDonald's could dine out on her for a month. Anyway, we're... Good God. I got distracted. Okay, right. I think we've sort of like been into the ins and outs of that. Whether it's good or bad, it's creating division, which surely is the opposite to what they wanted. You know, that it's surely if they want a standard, they don't want it being pulled apart by the people they want to apply it to.
The truth of it is, I think, and this comes back to regenerative, and this is kind of why I love regenerative as well. There are no standards, and what is regenerative to me is different to what is regenerative to you.
Yeah.
What is sustainable, or what meets this greener farms, and what doesn't, is different to different people. There is no standard. And that infuriates people because they cannot capitalize on what somebody is doing. So to add value, the only way of adding value is to set standards, to create standards, and then get other people to buy into them. Yeah. So the likes of Sainsbury's,
it's extortion.
Marks and Spencer's, these people have enough power, they can come together over, you know, a sordid lunchtime in some fancy country club and come up with these ideas of, right, this is the standard that we are all accepting. This is, we've raised the bar. This is it. And then we can, they've got the power to make it happen.
God, if only there was some kind of national farming union that could actually stand up to these people.
Yeah, I don't know what the NFU are doing in response to this at this point. Like I said,
there is one. Goodness.
Manette, I'm a fan of Manette. I think she does a lot of good work.
Yeah,
I don't know what. And
I'm
I would imagine in time, the NFU will take a stance and they will put their head above the parapet and be vocal. I would imagine.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Is it a bad thing? The supermarkets have said, right, there isn't a standard. We're going to create one. We're going to create a sustainable, regenerative, we're calling it greener, standard.
Mm.
Is that a bad thing?
No, but the thing... So what would be the NFU's response? Oh, we've got our own standards.
The NFU's response would be, well, why communicate? Talk to. Have a conversation. You know, where's the science?
Yeah.
Let's see the science to support your claims that if you do this, you will be better than if you do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what, you know, with any new, you know...
And yet all the time, the research organisations, AHDB, Rothamsted, all these different places are getting less and less funding.
Yeah.
So they're setting standards that are based on, well, they hope, evidence, and yet they're removing the capacity to provide evidence.
Is it because they're producing less at the moment?
Who?
The NFU, Rothamsted, AHDB, all of these, you know, funded organisations. You know, when was the last time you saw trial data coming out of Rothamsted that absolutely blew your mind and goes, Christ, that's something I never thought of, never knew, cutting edge, amazing. This is going to change farming. When was the last time AHDB did something that knocked your socks off?
Ooh, that's... Yeah.
Where is innovation happening?
I feel attacked because I used to work at Rothamsted.
Where does innovation happen?
Innovation happens, and unfortunately, it's industry-driven. So you've got the same people that are making the rules are making the science.
Yep.
You know, isn't there a Sainsbury lab at John Innes? I mean, it's... perhaps so I'm being very cynical.
I went to Ramiran.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And...
What stands for, by the way? Oh, it's God. Readily available... Nitrogen is the
recycling.
Oh, recycling and
Recycling of agricultural, municipal, and industrial
nitrogen.
Something. Or, no, not nothing right. to do with nitrogen. It's to do with recycling of organic manures.
And that was in Cambridge, wasn't it?
I was in Cambridge, and all of the science papers that were presented, all of the new science that was presented, which was pretty much all AD. And composting, because that's where the money is in recycling. All of the science, all of the papers were good, interesting papers, but they were all funded by people that were looking to capitalize and make money.
Yeah, of course.
From the technology that they're producing.
Well, have you noticed, this is me being cynical, coming from research, but once they, like, in oilseed rape, for example, you had FOMA, and then it was like leaf spot, and then they kind of got to grips with that, and so they had to find verticillium, and then they had to find Rhizoctonia, because that's the way funding works. It's sort of like all of a sudden these threats come up because...
But this is the problem, is the scientists that were in the room and presenting, very clever people, but they were doing work for companies that were hoping to monetize products.
Working for the man.
Rather than looking at the science, what does the science tell them? Where does the science lead them? Forget the acidification of slurry. I heard it a million times.
Yeah.
Forget AD, again, a million times. No interest in it whatsoever. What does the science say? How is the best way to move forward?
Mm.
Forget the money. So
but is that more of a sociological answer than a scientific answer?
Well, of course it is.
You know, it's the science is serving society, supposedly. So if there's problems, you need to deal with society, the issues in society. So
yes, but then we live in a capitalist society, which is driven by money and profits.
Exactly, long may it rain.
So Gabe Brown, who's a self-proclaimed capitalist, and he wasn't backwards in coming forward in that regard, you know, is somebody that's happy to admit that, yes, I'm interested in making money. Well, everybody's interested in making money because we've created a society where money is everything.
Yeah.
It's literally everything. How, you know, you talk about...
How Mrs. else Gerber, would you get cocaine and hookers?
Exactly. But you talk about, and I always say this, the survival of the fittest. You know, humans, you know, Neanderthal Andrew and Neanderthal Coral, it was a survival of the fittest. Who can produce, who can provide... for their family. The hunter-gatherer that could provide the most was considered the alpha male.
Yeah, I guess so. And then society came together and farming and plant breeding.
Yep.
Everything changed.
Yep.
And we're still feeling the repercussions of that now.
So all of a sudden we had an abundance, you know, why were the Egyptians so advanced, such an advanced civilization? It's because they had an abundance of food.
Yeah.
It meant people had time to do science, reading, literature, architecture, all of those things. They had time to do other things.
They didn't have Red Pyramid.
They didn't have Red Pyramid. No, that would have been interesting to see what their standards were.
No ratchet in this grain. Oh, sorry. That was Egyptian accent, by the way. Really, you're welcome.
Yeah. Sorry, any Egyptian listeners.
You beat me to it. There aren't any. Who are we kidding?
So it's now we've got an abundance of food. We can focus on other things. But now the how do we determine success is how much money do you have in your bank account? What car do you drive? What, you know, how affluent are you? What clothes do you wear? Those things are what drives the society to dominate, dominance. You know, that
so is that what Red Tractor's doing? They're asserting dominance. We're in such a decadent society now.
The supermarkets are.
Yeah.
The supermarkets want to keep hold.
So they're the Roman emperors of our day.
Yeah. You speak to producers outside of the UK that are looking to market their produce, you know, internationally. They are reluctantly working with UK supermarkets. UK supermarkets expect twice as many hoops to be jumped through before they'll even consider the produce.
Yeah.
And then they'll offer them half the price.
Yeah. Wankers.
So where's the incentive for, you know, I went to Kenya this year and growers in Kenya growing avocados, why would we sell to England where we've got to jump through loads of hoops that cost us money and we get half the price versus selling to the Middle East where they just ask us,
will they kill someone?
They don't ask
I'm good at this.
Any questions, and we'll pay them twice the price.
Yeah.
So it's the supermarkets that are shooting themselves in the foot. They're trying to maintain control. They're trying to it sounds a bit weird, and it's not as extreme as this, but they are trying to control what we as consumers and food people, food consumers, what we eat.
Yeah. Which is basically underlying the whole of the nation's health. While we've got a crumbling National Health Service, we're being fed shit. It's a terrible, vicious circle where basically the health of a society is based upon how healthy or how healthy the farming community is, in the sense that how well the farmers are doing. So should we really, for the health of the nation, be putting extra pressure on farmers?
Well, the pressure on farmers it comes back to quality. What is quality? You know, we now measure the success of a farmer by the yield that they produce.
Yeah.
And we generally know that the greater the yield, the more diluted the nutrients of that food
Nutrient density, yeah.
So should we be rewarding farmers for growing the juiciest or the highest bricks or the highest nutrient density carrot as opposed to growing the most carrots?
Yeah.
You know, if you've got to eat twice as many apples to get the same benefit from the apple or the same nutrients from the apples we used to 30, 40 years ago, are we better or worse as a farming, you know, collective industry?
Well, why not make compound feed for humans?
Well, they already do. You can go to the hospital and they'll hook you up to a drip and you'll survive there indefinitely.
Yeah, I guess so.
So we can already do that, but it doesn't necessarily provide you the energy that you need to actually live.
Yeah.
And yes, we've got the deficiencies, but it's you know, I'm not the right person to speak to about this. I'm not a nutritionist.
I know.
I wouldn't even say I'm a jack of all trades.
No.
I know a little bit about...
You're jack of no trades. Jack shit.
Just jack shit. I know jack shit. Yeah. I know him well.
Yeah.
I think there's something in that. So it's that's a societal change, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. I do not see McDonald's putting on their burgers that, okay, this contains X number of preservatives, you know, X number of chemicals, and the nutritional benefits are X, Y, and Z. You know, we consider nutrition at the moment as calories.
Yeah. So it should the McDonald's be, instead of, I'm loving it. I'm accepting it.
We've accepted McDonald's.
Don't get me wrong. McDonald's do a cracking job.
McDonald's do a hell of a lot for UK agriculture. So I haven't got any beef with what they do for UK agriculture.
Very good.
But the produce that they produce, the burgers they produce, you know, again, we've been to France recently. You drive around, you don't see anywhere near as many McDonald's or fast food restaurants in general.
Yeah,
and you don't see anywhere near as many fat people.
Snail-eating bastards. Sorry. Yeah, frog's legs, of course.
We love the bridge.
Anyway, we're starting
we're
to go down.
Now. We're digressing.
So what I want to sort of like tie this all up with is this red tractor, green tractor, whatever you want to call it. Mm. What does it actually mean for the farmer? Just sort of, is it just another nail in the coffin of their business, or is it something they should embrace and sort of like cherish as a, so at last someone's doing this?
I think farmers need to be seen to be doing something. You know, the agriculture at the beginning of the whole climate crisis got a lot of stick because there was a lot of people with a lot of money pointing the finger at agriculture first.
Yeah.
Now agriculture's defended itself really well, and it's now trying to be proactive and demonstrate, no, look, we really are good at what we do, you know. So I think that's a good thing. That is not a bad thing at all. The way in which we do that is very, very difficult. And I think that jumping on to ideas, principles, science that isn't necessarily 100% robust isn't the way to go about it.
No,
I think that if there's going to be standards that we're setting, that we want our farmers to achieve and meet in their production methods, we need to make sure that it is absolutely bomb-proof, that it is measurable, that it's quantifiable, and that it's long-term.
And it's fair and equitable.
100%. You know, that they all go without saying, you know, one of the issues that farmers have is around carbon. And it looks like that the suggestions that I've seen and some of the opinion pieces that I've read on this are suggesting that this is another way of supermarkets to get hold of the carbon within the farmers' fields.
Okay.
So we all know that there's a hell of a lot of carbon in soil, organic matter. There's more carbon in the soil than there is in the atmosphere, and the ability for it to sequester, all of that bollocks that you've heard a million times.
Yeah.
We know that's the case. If you can increase your organic matter in your soil, you are technically sequestering carbon. Supermarkets, I think, want to get hold of that and use it to offset their carbon emissions.
Yeah.
Which is just ridiculous. Industry, you know, what was the old saying about farmers are the only one that buy everything at retail price, sell everything at wholesale price, and pay the transport both ways?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same principle in regards to carbon. You know, farmers are being... The carbon calculators are accounting for carbon emissions from the production of ammonium nitrate.
Yeah.
So they're being charged, or that's put on their bottom line, when they didn't produce it.
Yeah.
And now what's happening is supermarkets, are trying to take away from the farmers that carbon sequestering capabilities.
Yeah.
Is what the accusations are being thrown at this new regulation module, standard, whatever you want to call it. So I think farmers are a little bit annoyed. I think there's a little bit of uncertainty. Anything new is scary. Everything, people don't like change. People don't like being told what to do. Let the dust settle and let's look at it in the cold light of day. What does it actually mean for farmers? Well, it means a little bit more work, but they'll probably get paid a little bit more for their produce. And at the end of the day, farmers need the money.
Yeah.
They'll probably take it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I'm gonna wrap it up now. You're a farmer. You're not, but imagine you are.
Yeah.
You're doing everything you can. You like to think of yourself as being regenerative, sort of like, you know, mindset. Red Tractor come to you and they say, right, this is voluntary. This green module about carbon or sort of nutrient management. Do you sign up for it?
No.
You don't.
I'm not part of... I wouldn't sign up to Red Tractor.
You wouldn't?
No.
So you'd starve.
As I said to you earlier, I was on a farm last week. Nice farmer, good farmer, like him. Not huge, nice, good size, 100 hectare, mixed farmer. And he had a farm shop.
Mm-hmm.
He sells all of the meat produced on his farm through the farm shop. And he has been now for a while. Not once has he been asked if he is Red Tractor certified.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's asked him if he's Pasture for Life certified or organic. Sounds or a bit dodgy. Anything. So obviously he's got his food safety certificates, yeah, of course, and bits, yeah, and pieces. Yeah. But nobody's asked him for these standards.
Yeah.
If I was farming, as you suggested in this sort of hypothetical question, I would be a mixed farmer, adding value to the produce that I produce and selling direct.
Yeah.
And I would be saying that things are farmed organically or regeneratively. I would be saying and explaining and communicating the way in which I grow produce. I would be inviting my customers onto my farm so they can see for themselves. And I would be building the relationship with my local community who I am ultimately servicing in regards to providing or selling food to them.
Okay.
But these large landowners that, you know, Jimmy come lately, who's got £1 million in his back pocket and bought a farm wherever it might be. Well, we need more than £1 million, but he's bought a farm and he's got a farm manager farming it. They're not going to be doing that because they own 1,000 hectares.
They're not engaged.
They're not engaged, and they've got too much ground to be producing for the local community. Mm. They need to be producing and selling internationally. That's the only way they make money. And then you're part of the international commodities market, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, a little small mixed farm selling to their local villages, local community, will be far more beneficial for the environment. I guarantee you they'll have a much nicer life as the actual farmer, and I'd argue that that's a much better way of producing and growing food.
Yeah, agreed. All right, I'm bored with this now. And your car is hotter than hell. I've got this very big compulsion to take all my clothes off.
Please that, don't.
No, don't worry, you're Please safe. Don't. I'm just going to open the window. But so, okay, I think we've digressed and we've been in and out. It'd be great to hear some other people's opinions who it actually directly affects, and even someone from Red Tractor. It'd be brilliant to get some
we had somebody that from a carbon calculator that took umbrage to some of the comments we made last time about carbon markets fraudulent.
I don't think we actually said fraudulent, and I would like to
I would call some of their behaviour fraudulent in the way in which they're operating.
Oh, fucking hell.
Lawsuits come this way. And they wanted to set the record straight. When asked to them to come onto the podcast, they
didn't
reply.
Yeah, might be my amount of swearing, possibly.
Challenge us, you know. Yeah. That's the thing, is you know, we're not saying that we are right or we're wrong. It is very much our opinion, but we'd like to think that we're fairly knowledgeable
open,
in regards to our opinions. You know, they're not based on nothing. No. We have done a little bit of research. We are working within the industry. We do know a little bit, so we have a right to have an opinion, even if you disagree. Yeah. And we disagree with you.
Cool.
We'll have an argument and decide that we're right.
Can I express some of my general opinions about life?
Probably better not to on this platform, because then the lawsuits really will start coming in.
I guess so. Well, yeah. All right, last question for you. There's a couple of books out, one by Mr. Smage and one by Mr. Monbiot.
Yeah.
What side of the discussion are you falling on?
I've read them both, and I'm going to say that I actually enjoyed reading Monbiot's book more.
Yeah.
Because it was a different opinion to me.
Yeah.
So I like being challenged. He had a very different opinion to me, and it was thought-provoking.
So his book, Regenesis.
I thought it was thought-provoking and interesting. There was one reference that I particularly liked to ghost acres.
Yeah.
How many ghost acres do you need to run your farm? Meaning, what are your inputs? How much? Yeah. What are your inputs? Where are they coming from? How many acres have been needed to grow or produce those inputs? I thought that was a nice terminology. It wasn't one that I'd heard before. But at the end of the day, I very much come down with Chris, isn't it?
Chris Mage. To a farming-free
future.
Yeah, that's
That's the side that I'm on, you know, no question about it. But I did think that Monbiot's book was interesting. I thought it was thought-provoking.
He's a professional writer.
I think if you ignore it completely, you're a fool.
Yeah.
But absolutely, you need to fact-check it.
Yeah.
which was done in saying no to a farming free future.
That's it.
Which I also enjoyed, but not as much because
not so much challenge.
Well, we share a similar opinion.
Yeah.
Or that's my standpoint, my views. Which it's just like I'm listening to somebody.
I must admit,
do you know what I mean?
Reading Chris Major's book, there are quite a few moments where I go, yeah, gotcha, you bastard.
Yeah, yeah,
you,
it's a very
fucking Marxist twat, Monbiot.
It's a very good reply. Yeah. It really is. I just didn't enjoy, from a reading point of view, yeah, reading it as much as Monbiot.
No,
just
no,
because it
that.
Was just a little bit more.
But the thing is, the way it was written as a response, so it didn't have good. It didn't have the narrative freedom.
No, it didn't.
Georgie
it was,
boy,
and yeah, I enjoyed. And maybe we should delve into those books possibly on the next podcast, because yeah, I think there was a lot in both that you
absolutely
can pick up on and expand on.
You be Chris, I'll be George. I need more tofu to knit. Ooh.
Yeah, you can
ooh,
be George.
My Hessian underpants.
You can be George as a vegetarian yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do that. Yeah. No, it was interesting, and I read both books, and I took my time reading them.
Well, you're pretty slow. You had your finger slow, under most
yeah,
of the words.
I know.
You started colouring the first one in.
Yeah, I thought they were colouring books. They had no numbers. I didn't know what colour things were.
Oh, sorry.
But no, it was interesting, that.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And there's a few other books that I want to read that I'm looking at the moment. So, yeah, they were good.
Cool. Right, I think it's over 3/4 an hour. Nobody should be, nobody
yeah
should suffer anymore of this.
Nobody's
bollocks
in the tractor long enough to listen to these podcasts now. This
not awake. Not awake. No. So this is either having a shower or a shit or something. So enjoy your shit or your shower or
yep
whatever you're doing while you listen to this.
Driving
perhaps
to
you
market
could send some photos into the
no,
Twitter.
Don't.
No, no.
Don't.
No,
don't.
Please don't. Yeah, right. We're well into season 2 now. We had a bit of a hiatus. Andrew got married. He's been doing Nuffield. So it's been a busy old boy. But we're back. We're back with a vengeance. Yeah, we'll be talking more shit. So
quite literally or metaphorically.
Yeah. So
speak to you soon.
Stay on board. See you soon.